Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. Hi, and welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Berman, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Our guest, Norman C. Burns, has a 35-year track record of producing groundbreaking copy and award-winning films. Beginning as a stage director, Norman's production work has included features and documentaries, TV series, and commercials, and he's a member of the Directors Guild of America, Screen Actors Guild, Actors Equity, and the Internet Press Guild. And Carol, Norman has also been a donor to the Roy Dean Film Grants for many years, hasn't he?
Yes, he has, and thank you, Norman, for your ongoing support of our film grants and for joining us today.
Carol, it is my pleasure to be here. Thanks for asking me.
Well, I know there's a lot going on, and I thought we might start with what your latest class is. I know you work with filmmakers in many ways, so first I really want to know about your services, Norman.
Oh, okay. My classes are ongoing. I'm teaching classes in scheduling, budgeting, business plans, and fundraising now. I've added that because fundraising has changed so much in the last few years. Those classes are pretty regular. I do a pretty consistent schedule. I've been teaching over at Media Services in New York, and I'll be out in L.A., I hope, within the next 3 or 4 months to teach out there.
Oh, great. Well, we really want to know about that ahead of time. I want everybody to know, I've taken Norman's classes before. They are so wonderful. Great visuals, great detail. Anyone who could write a 60-page proposal has got everything covered. I'll never forget your telling us about the government grant that you won with the 60-page proposal, right, Norman?
Absolutely. That was for the writing code, a three-part documentary on the history of writing. And it was a 60-page proposal, and we did win. And spent the next 4.5 years in production before those films were released.
That's wonderful. But the detail that went into those, into the paperwork to win that award must have been incredible. How long did it take you for the research and everything?
About a year and a half. We applied, they kicked it back, we revised, we kept researching, we had a lot of consultants on it. But that level of detail is really what's necessary to do a production. It's not, you can't be offhanded about it. You can't sort of say, well, I'm going to go grab a camera and we'll shoot something interesting. I mean, you can, but you won't get any funding for it. It takes an awful lot of preparation.
Yes, and the devil is in the details, and particularly if you're going after grants. I know from seeing the submissions that come into my grants, and sometimes it's 2 pages, and you think, did you empty the envelope? Are you sure there's not anything else in there? No, that's it. People don't realize that they have to really give us a visual of the film in order to get it funded. So tell me more about your funding classes. What goes on in them?
Well, there's so many sources of funding right now, and many people miss them. They don't know that they can apply for grants. They don't know that product placement is a real, it's a viable possibility. They don't know that there's sponsorship on a lot of films. People simply want some money, and at the moment, Kickstarter and Indiegogo are the two big gimme sites. And people have a friend who wants to do a film, and he's been trying to do this for quite some time. And he keeps putting it on Kickstarter, and he doesn't promote it, and he doesn't do the proper research and doesn't expand it properly. And it goes there, and he makes $300, and then it dies, and he rewrites it for the next 6 months and posts it again without any major revision. It's as you said, the devil's in the details. Did you invent that phrase? Was that from you, too? That detail work is not only how you explain your project, how you show what your film is about, it's how you discover what you want to do. The detail isn't just for the financier. It is really for the filmmaker to discover what is important and what isn't important in their project.
Well, I just want to address what you just said, how you discover what you want to do. I have to tell you that in judging the grants one time, it was a brilliant woman in New York who had an idea for a film. She got in the top five, but she didn't win. So I really liked her personally as well as her project, but I had to call her and tell her, you didn't win, and I took notes for my judges, and I had to say why. So I just went right for my notes and told her exactly what they said, which was, we don't think you know what the film is. And do you know what she said? She said, you're absolutely right. I don't know what the film is yet, but I'm working on it. And I thought, you know, if you had waited 6 months, I have three grants a year, you could have come in 6 months and you might have won. But to get back up to the top five again is a lot of work. So, I mean, sometimes people know they don't know what the film is. They just have this broad shotgun look at it, right?
Well, when we did the writing code, there were three producers on it. We sat down and we said, we'd love to do a film about, and we figured out what we were all interested in, which was writing, and we moved to the history of writing. It then took a year and a half of research to find out what the film was about, because it turned out not to be at all what we thought it would be. It wasn't presented the way we thought it would be. The more we learned, the more the film changed, the more, I hope, it got richer and more complex, because we pick up details that it were impossible to know at the beginning. And it changed the way we made the film, the way we structured the production, and the story that the film told. Can't do that without knowledge.
Yes, so you, one of the benefits of a filmmaker, one of the most important characteristics is flexibility, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I find, and I'm sure you do too, I find a lot of filmmakers who lock down on their idea and will not vary it. And they generally fail. It takes great flexibility. It takes adaptability. It takes, you really have to listen to yourself and listen to the feedback you get on a film in order to let your film grow. It's an organic thing. And it has to evolve, or else it's just this sort of dead thing, and you might as well have taken a photograph and walked away.
Right. Well, I'd like to ask you some more questions about the funding classes. And so could you just give us some ideas or tips on product placement?
There are an assortment of firms that provide product placement. It's not quite as rich as we would like it to be, and especially for indies, it's extremely difficult. But on almost every film I've worked on, we've had no problem calling up a company, a beer company, a soda company, a computer company, and saying, your product will be on screen. Do you want to participate? And they've responded with product, which, you know, it's not huge, but it's on a low-budget film. It can certainly help the budget. They've responded with financing. We've never been in the fancy numbers, but they certainly paid for more than lunch with the contributions they made to a production. Their concerns are that their product comes off in a good light, that it's not being abused or misrepresented, that it's not ridiculed. They want the same kind of positive image that they would get out of a commercial. And if you can provide that, you can actually get funding from a whole lot of companies. There's a danger in this, of course. You start looking like you've plastered all of the products on screen and it becomes a commercial and it gets a little bit silly. And instead of dialogue, you're tempted to have your actor say, what a good beer. I think I'll have that with. So it's you do need some care with this, but it can be done.
Well, it's all about using products that belong. In other words, if someone is in the kitchen and they open their cabinet, Cheerios might be sitting there along with Folgers coffee. And if you're sitting at a desk, you might have a bottle of Sparkletts water. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're going to do things that are normal. There are degrees of things. If you can put a product in the hands of a famous actor, that becomes good, even if they don't say anything other than simply hold it or wear it or move with it. The cars in the James Bond films were terrific examples of very high-end product placement that I never quite understood the value that was paid for that product placement, but apparently the car companies did, and they were extraordinarily pleased with it. So,
yeah, the car companies love that type. Well, good. All right. So,
and Carolyn, they still do. They still do. You're not going to get $1 zillion for your Lamborghini or whatever the car may be, but if you put in a Toyota or a Chevy or a Ford, you will get cooperation from these car companies, and I've been able to get a lot of production cars out of that kind of product placement. Not money, but production cars, and it saved me enormous amounts of money on a production.
Yes, I totally understand that. In City by the Sea, I remember looking at that film, and their product placement was incredible, the amount of millions that they got for it. But the point was that they gave the car a name. The car became a character in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And so that got them more money from the car company.
Oh, absolutely. That's- absolutely. They love that.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Well, this is good to know because it's creating a relationship with the product placement companies. And once you do, then when you go to write the next film, you might have that same another character in the kitchen open the cabinet with the same product that you got before because you know you have a connection and you know that your film fits their requirements. So that only gives you additional ways to help fund the film. And it's a beginning for an independent filmmaker, right?
It can be an enormous way. Years ago, I'll tell a little story. I was on a production, a sort of a terror film, and I had a PA who went on to become a Hollywood producer and a studio exec, and he was a PA at that point, and he said, what can I do? What can I do, Norman? Mr. Norman. And I said, I don't know. Get me some product. Get some beer. So he got on the phone. He arranged, I don't know how, for 300 cases of beer. 300 cases of beer. As it turned out, we were filming in a prison. that was the headquarters for the Essex County Police Department. We made such good friends by every Friday night handing every cop on the beat a case of beer. Say, here, go home. Have a nice weekend.
Oh, they how wonderful.
Loved us. They looked out for us. They gave us police escorts to and from the set. They alerted us to problems. And that beer was so incredibly valuable to us. I don't know that we ever could have made the film without that beer. That they gave us no money. They just gave us the beer. But boy, was it valuable.
Yes, and how smart of you to find those good ways to use it, because when the police are on your side, it's a clear shot.
It certainly is. I had exactly the all I needed was a deal with Dunkin' Donuts. We would have been home free.
Right. Oh, dear. All right. Well, you also mentioned that in your classes you discuss sponsorship. So is that still alive? Can you still get that from some companies?
It is still possible. It depends on what it is your film is about, what you're talking about. We tend to look at things with a negative eye, and that makes sponsorship it makes it impossible. But if you're handling something positively, if you're, I don't know, you're filming in front of a factory and everybody loves this factory and it's the best place in town, it is certainly possible to say, hello, company, we want to feature your company. That's your logo up there. How will you help us? And they will. They will work with you. They will provide funds. They'll provide facilities. They'll do what they can. And some of these corporations, while CEOs are making vast amounts of money, we won't go there. Some of these companies are not exactly cash rich. They don't want to spend their cash. They want to give it to their stockholders. So sometimes it's not money. As you know, in-kind contributions can mean a great deal. And I filmed in front of companies that have just allowed us to use their lunchroom for our lunches, which saved us the trouble of having to set up a place and rent chairs and rent tables. Every little bit helps on a low budget production.
Yes, it does. It's a camaraderie and it's creating a good relationship for every place that you shoot. I really agree with you. I know that sometimes, for example, even you can get discounts on things that you're not even thinking about. I went into my Kinko's where I've been going for 20 years and finally got up the courage to ask the woman at the desk, who I've known forever, how do I get a discount because I am a nonprofit? She said, oh, well, all you have to do is give me your IRS number. I'll put it in the computer and you'll get a 10% discount. And I thought, why did it take me so long to make that ask? Because there are so many filmmakers out there working under nonprofits, sponsored by them, that now, since we do fiscal sponsorships, I tell them to take that nonprofit certificate everywhere with their acceptance letter and say, what can you give me? So that, too, is another way, don't you think, that you can get discounts?
It absolutely is. I will not speak to how you missed 20 years of discounts, but I think filmmakers get so focused on what they're doing that they, in many cases, miss the big picture. They don't step back and say, how does this impact the community? How can I work with the community to get their support, whether support is financial or otherwise? And as I tell people in my classes, don't always think profits mean money. There are many ways of defining profits. And if you can give profit to a corporation, to the company you're filming in front of, they will respond incredibly well. Many of these companies need goodwill more than they need access to their own lunchroom or even a little bit of money.
Absolutely. Well said. So are these any of these classes online?
I have been restructuring my classes, rejiggering them, and I truly hope I will have them back online before the summer is over. So give me about 2 or 3 months. I should have everything online. I love teaching online. It's so comfortable. It's good for me. It's good for the students. The technology has gotten better, so it's very easy to share the screen. I actually encourage people to interrupt me and to ask questions and to tell me what their specific problem is, because it's very hard to address every problem unless somebody brings it up.
Right. The teacher and the taught become the teaching is an old saying, and I find that so true. The students have a lot to give and information to share. Well, all right, we promised to discuss 5 reasons that you are not in production. So let's talk about some of those reasons.
Okay. We started talking about one of them. You haven't used all your resources. You haven't tapped into every possibility for funds because you didn't think you were of value to the community. You are. You are. The fact that you're filming in front of the factory doesn't mean you have to, you know, run in before dawn and get out before anyone shows up. It means you need to take a meeting with the company and build a relationship. And these companies may support you. Communities may. A lot of things can be done. So that's it's a source of income and a source of in-kind support. You want 4 more, huh?
Right.
Someone in my group just posted that they're working on their budget for their film, and they've narrowed it down. They want somewhere between $15 and $25 million for the production. And I will bet they will never get their money, because if I were a backer who had $15 million, I'd run away from somebody who didn't know how much they wanted. We're talking about a $10 million span. That's a lot of money, and it's real money. It's the filmmaker's job to find out how much their show will cost. And I understand there's variations, and, you know, if we get Meryl Streep, it costs more, and if we get Mary Jones, it costs less. But the filmmaker has got to work out what their optimal budget is and then tell me that number. And if they can't, they haven't done their job, and I don't want to give them my money, or the investor doesn't want to give them their money. So that, to me, is one of the biggest, is actually not knowing how much your film is supposed to cost. Yes.
So pitch someone, Norman, with that big of a spread. I mean, you wouldn't get to first base with anyone.
No, you can't. You can't. And this person was done. They had done their work. They were ready to go into a pitch session. You cannot do it. Go into a pitch session asking for $15 to $25 million. Your pitch session is over.
Right. Well, even in the independent world, I was looking at a proposal that said between $750,000 and $2 million, and I said no.
It's the same thing. Exactly.
It's a number. You can't do that, and because even though it was a lower budgeted film, it just means you don't know what you're doing. I'm afraid. Because if you're talking to lawyers, entrepreneurs, and people with wealth, they know money, and they know budgets because they're used to it in their business. They have a budget every year that they work from, and so where's your budget? And let me see the line items. Wouldn't that be the next thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Too many people try to get away without doing a real budget. Budgets are hard to make. It's why I continually teach budgeting, and it is one of those courses that I repeat over and over and over again because it's so important. It's such a foundation for a film. Many filmmakers don't want to bother. They don't want to break down their script. They don't want to say, ooh, if I'm in this room for 3 days filming all these scenes, how will I ever get there? Ooh. They don't want to look at those problems, so they think they'll resolve it later. consequently, they don't even make a budget. They'll make a top sheet. Say, let's see, locations. That'll be about $50,000. Okay, we'll put that down. And there's no consciousness in terms of the detail. Filmmaking it's an astonishingly detailed business, and the detailing begins right at the beginning. It's your foundation.
Well, Norma, don't you recommend that they get on the phone and call their local dealers, like for a sound edit, call and find out what it costs and get the numbers from the people they want to work with?
I recommend that all the time, Carol. Some people listen, and normally they go ahead and they make movies, and most people don't. They think they'll be able to slide by. I'll worry about the details later. I know my film is going to cost $5 million, and I'll figure it out later. Well, number one, how do you know it will cost $5 million? You don't. You're making up your numbers, and when you get to reality, you've either under-budgeted or over-budgeted. The odds of your being correct are one in a zillion.
Right.
So, yes, I always tell people to do the detail work and to call and to get estimates. You call a lab. You call the rental house. You call the guy with the grip truck in order to get real numbers. Will they be accurate? No. But they're a whole lot more accurate than guessing.
Absolutely right. Right. I remember one time in one of your classes that you said for a documentary filmmaker to sit down, do a detailed budget, make sure you've got every person you want to interview and your hotels, your food, your travel, et cetera, and all of the expenses you went over. And then you say when you get to the bottom line, take that number and use it, but throw the budget away because it will change 20 times. But you have worked over for a documentary. And as long as you keep your interviews to approximately the same number of interviews, you are going to come fairly close. Where does that stand today? Have you changed that?
No, I still hold with that. The more detail you can get, the better you are. Documentaries are they're really unique because you talk to person A who recommends you really, that's the wrong person, although he was written in your script. He says, no, I'm not the right guy. You need to talk to these three women and this guy here. I say, wait a minute. So I've replaced one with four. You are constantly adjusting as you make a documentary. But you know, in order to make your film, you've got to talk to eight people. That's what you've decided. And even if somebody recommends four others, you're going to winnow that down to the one or two you really need. You're going to talk to eight people, and they're each in a separate location. The airfare is pretty similar whether you're flying to L.A. or to Des Moines. It's close. You're within dollars of all the fares. Hotels are pretty uniform these days, within maybe 10%, 20%, almost anywhere in the country. Food is, again, constant. So once you know you're going to do eight people and you know you need prep and you know you need shooting time, you can then make a budget that is realistic. But don't get locked on Des Moines because you may be in Albuquerque instead, but it won't matter in terms of your budget.
Right.
Will matter for where you go, but not into the reality of the production.
Right. Well, all right, so we've got two. Let me just say, where do you recommend that people, how do you recommend they find investors? Let's go to features for the moment. Investors for features are larger donors for docs or even investors for docs. I mean, let's see, where do you think and how do you find them?
Well, this goes back to one of the reasons why people aren't in production. They don't know who they're making their film for. There's an intended audience, and I'll bet you a dollar right now, Carol, if you ask random filmmaker one, who are you making your film for, they'll say everybody. That's the wrong answer. No film is for everybody. Every film has a target audience. It's designed for people who are interested in a certain sport, a certain location, a certain series of events. And those are the people that you need to contact. If you're making a film about bowling, there are bowling associations, there are bowling clubs, there are bowling outlets. And many of the people who are part of those organizations would care to see a film about bowling. They're perfect to contact. And if you haven't contacted the people who, number one, you have to identify the people who care about your film. Then you can start building up lists of those kinds of people. And don't ask me, I don't know where to get a list of bowling enthusiasts. But I'll bet if that were the task, I'll bet we could find that answer within a day.
Oh, easy, right.
Then you have names. You have people you can contact. And there's two things. Look, I'm looking for an investment. I'm making a bowling film. 99% of the people are going to say no thank you. On the other hand, if you've done it properly, you've just done some great promotion for your film. Say, oh, okay, you won't invest, but can I tell you about the film when it comes out? So you're starting to build word of mouth. You're starting to build an audience. And one of those people will say, oh, you still have room for investors? Oh, okay, tell me about it. Well, now you have somewhere you can pitch. There are two kinds. I'm sorry, Carol.
No, I'm just saying exactly.
You'll find various kinds of investors. There's the people who invest because they invest. They put their money to use. And there are passion investors. There are people who really care about the subject. Sometimes even more deeply than you do as the filmmaker who's just devoted years to getting to this point, they live this. For them, this is an important event, and they will help you get to it. But it's your job, the filmmaker's job, to identify those people. And it's not dear Mr. and or Mrs. Bowling Enthusiast. It's dear Mr. Jones, dear Miss Smith. They're real people, and you've got to get it down to that level of detail.
Yes. Exactly. You've got to get it down to the specifics, and then the people are there. At least you know where to go to find these people. So, great. So we've covered three wonderful ideas here already. So we're talking about budgets. We're talking about getting our numbers correct. And what do you think about pitching the film from who's on the crew, because I hear people do that often. They don't tell me the story. They just tell me who's on the crew, not the actors, but someone who has been on a brilliant film and made a lot of money and now is going to work on your film. And they give you just maybe a log line or a couple of sentences about the concept of the film. What do you have to say about that type of a pitch?
It fails most of the time because it's hard to visualize. If, on the other hand, you really have, I don't know, the art director from Star Wars, you can really say, look at this work. Look at or X-Men or any film you pick that you really like. We have the man or the woman who did this work, and we expect them to bring that quality to our film. My response is, that's nice. It's certainly better than, I have Mary Jones, and that's it. But I would ask to see what else this person has done. In many cases, even brilliant technicians have done one or two really good films and a whole lot of very ordinary films. Good films tend to come from a great concept, a tight story, a really good story, and a director who understands how to get performance out of not only the cast, but the technicians all the way along the line. And so I'm concerned with who's producing, who's directing. And I think it is more valuable than who's going to light my set or who's going to build my props, although those things are certainly important. They become super critical when you talk about the director of photography. Now you're looking at image, but in the same way, DPs don't always do great work because they need that director helping shape the image that they're creating.
Right.
And a producer with the wisdom to bring in the right equipment for them to do their job.
Right.
It's extremely difficult, Carol, when your DP or your gaffer says to you, I need a widget, and it's going to cost you $10,000 for the day, to determine whether you really need that widget or your crew wants to play for a day. You don't know unless you know. And if you don't know and you're the producer of the show, you've got to get on the phone and talk to other people who do know. It's really important. Producing is not a passive role.
No, it's one of the most important roles on the film.
Yeah. Really. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Well, there's a lot of important roles. There's producing and directing and writing the DP and the art director. All can make or break a film. The editor, incredibly important.
Absolutely. It's amazing, I hear everyone say, how it's amazing how a good film gets made. And it's truly a unit working together with a single vision. And that, I guess, starts with the script and the director who sees the script's vision. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Unless your director, your producer and or director can see the vision and convey that vision to everybody else, you're not going to achieve the maximum you could. You're just going to miss it. And film is a passion art, and you need that core passion in order to bring everybody up to speed. Film crews really want to care about their production. I don't know I've ever been on a film crew, good or bad, where the crew wasn't going to all marry each other and we were going to get together next week after the show and we were going to be friends forever. Of course, you never see each other again, but until the next show. During that period, it is the most tightly knit group you've ever run into, and if you have a great leader, they can achieve incredible things.
Well said. Well said. I love it. Well, okay. I think you've given us so much information. I am so thrilled. Okay, so we've talked about finding backers, where to find them, identifying your audience, and honing in on those people who care about the subject matter of your film. Now, here's another question for you. If you have no money, can you make a movie anyway? Should you make that no-budget movie?
Oh, that is such a tough question. And the answer, being decisive about this, is yes and no. One of the gravest mistakes people can do is write a script, a brilliant script, and say, I need $1 million to do this. I've got $6,000 in my bank account. I'm going to make the movie anyway. Well, you actually can't make a multi-million dollar film for $6,000. It's not going to work. In order to do this, you have to find the single beat that tells your story. You have to find a moment that you want to film, or you should film something else. If your intent in making a low-budget film, a teeny budget, a no-budget film, is to show off yourself, pick something wonderful that you can do brilliantly. To do a big film and with just little resources isn't a wonderful thing, because it's always going to look like you missed the light in the corner. If you do a little tiny film and you do it brilliantly, you actually can come out way ahead. Now, these days, cameras are, well, I've got a camera in my cell phone that I can shoot a movie with. And I can shoot a 90-minute movie on my cell phone, edit it, and post it on that great theater of the Internet, YouTube. It can be done. So there is almost no cost in bottom-end cameras. And you're only talking about hundreds of dollars for a pretty decent camera and a couple of thousand for a really good camera. So these are not obstacles anymore. The gravest obstacle is understanding that film is collaborative. It takes a team to make. And I hear from a lot of people who have written the script and want to produce the script and direct it, and they probably would star in it too, and they'll do the editing. It's nice that you are capable of doing all of that, because it allows you to talk to people. But that's not what you want to do. You want to step back from your production. You want somebody to say, no, don't do that, so that you get a different set of eyes on your film. So unless your film is minuscule, teeny tiny, bring in people who you trust, who you love, whose work you respect. And I don't know how you're going to talk them into making your film, but that's the job. Talk them into making your film. And you understand, you won't be the first person who's conned somebody into working on a film for free, and you won't be the last. Go for it.
Yes. Well said. Go for it. But it is a group endeavor, and you have to have the right team players to make it really work. Okay, I see that in my grant submission, so I know you're absolutely right. And also, I'm sure you would recommend to them to use something that gives them more production value. See if they can get in a fair or like a state fair and film as if and get the rights to film in there and use the images, or something that is already happening that they can put in their film. A Fiesta Day, something brilliant that gives them free a lot of good footage, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I have visiting relatives who come to town now that I'm in New York, and I have rich visiting relatives and poor visiting relatives, and it's amazing what you can do for almost no money. And I think filmmakers have got to take that exact same approach. If you got money, then spend it well. If you don't, try to build your background so it's as rich and complex as possible. And you're correct. A fair, a parade, a rally. These are events, and many of these events are public, and they would probably love the publicity. I've never had problems filming at a fair. They kind of like it because it makes the grounds look all hectic and wonderful. And it adds incredible color to the film. Your only problem is making sure that that's what you need. Don't shoot a parade and pretend it's a fair. You can't quite do that, although people sometimes try. The pieces have to fit together. Make sure you have the crew to support you. It's wonderful to take a camera, you can throw it on your shoulder, you hold it in your hand and do a lot of shooting. Maybe you need somebody with a light. Maybe you need somebody with a reflector. Maybe you need somebody with a better microphone than the $2 thing that's stuck on the front of your camera. All of a sudden you've built a crew of people, so it's not just you, it's you and three or four or eight people going with you. And you've got to be able to talk to all of them and get the work out of them.
Right. Well said. Well, let me switch subjects here because I know that you run a large group on LinkedIn. So could you tell us about it, Norman?
Oh, I do, Carol. This is a new thing with me. I've been on it for, less than a year. It's called Film and Television Professionals. And I say that with some care because there are about 100 groups with variations on that name. There's Film and TV Pros, there's Film and Television, and on and on and on. There's just endless variations. This one's all spelled out, Film and Television Professionals. It's on LinkedIn. I believe it's either the largest or one of the largest film production groups on LinkedIn. We've got about, I think, just under 140,000 members. We're gaining about 1,000 a week, which is overwhelming to me.
Wow.
I get the wow factor every day when I sit down at the computer and I've got 480 people to approve of or not approve of for the group. It's quite astonishing. But the conversations are wonderful. People with questions are able to ask things. I was looking at these two cameras, which one should I get? And, of course, the first answer was neither. And then dozens of people chimed in talking about the lenses and the camera and the quality and what you get and how it's going to be used. This is great information.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. So we get to learn about camera information, about production, ideas or ways to save money and the top places to go to, that kind of thing?
Yes to all of these questions. Not only Kickstarter was brought up almost instantly. I allow no fundraising in the group. And I before we started this conversation, I kicked two people out of the group because they said, go to my campaign and give me money. And I won't tolerate it because it's not, I don't want it to be that kind of a group. It's a group for discussion. And one of the big discussions is how to use Kickstarter, how to make it work, and the things you do that are wrong that will make your campaign fail. I just love it. This is great information.
Oh, it is. I see this every day. So that could actually be our fifth tip. If you want to give us a tip on how to make a crowdfunding event work.
Well, it's not only a fifth tip. The tip is actually bigger than that. The tip is learn to network. Learn how to be part of a community and of smart people. And, there's a lot of communities out there. If you find it isn't smart, just leave. That's all. If you can become part of the community, if you can become a contributor, if your voice becomes a voice that's respected, people line up to help you. They want that you will find your level, whatever it is. If you're new, you'll find people who are slightly less new than you. If you're really a pro, you will find people who have been pros longer than you have. It's quite wonderful, and it really can help finance a film.
Right. And drive them to your website. I always teach people they've got to drive them to the website to collect the names because having a lot of names on Facebook is wonderful, but when it's time to go after money, it's those in your database that are seriously interested. Or that's what I have found.
Facebook is not quite like LinkedIn, Carol. It's a more, family-friendly organization. I think they would hate it. I think the teens are going to flock off of there now that I've said that. But it is. It's sort of casual. It's laid back. It's easy. And it's where I stay in touch with my family. Not necessarily my business cohorts, but my family. Old friends, drop a line, show me a picture of the kids. That's Facebook. LinkedIn tends to be more serious. It tends to be more business-oriented. It tends to be more focused on professional needs rather than personal needs. You know, if I need to look for a sharp filmmaker, somebody who's, oh, I don't know, does effects or stunts, I will invariably turn to LinkedIn and find them on there much quicker than I will on Facebook.
You would go to LinkedIn to look for referrals for crews?
You betcha. You betcha. I want my referrals from the best, smartest, sharpest people there are, and that's where I find them. It's where I find the more serious people. It's not that they're not on Facebook. I find too much clutter on Facebook to get to them. And LinkedIn,
wow.
if I'm looking for a gaffer, I can type in the word gaffer, and I'll get a list of thousands of them immediately. And if I need referrals for a gaffer, I can go to any one of the film groups, and there are quite a few, maybe a couple of thousand film groups, and say, who's the best gaffer in Baltimore? And I will get an answer very quickly.
Amazing. That's amazing. And you'll
get
comments from people who have worked with this person before.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can do that just by posting. If you're a really smart filmmaker, you have gathered a list of the people who are smart in your groups, and you can call one up and say, John, I'm looking for a gaffer. I know you've worked in Baltimore because you've read this on their profile. Is there anyone you can help me with? And they will take your call, and they will go out of their way to answer it.
That's wonderful. What a great resource. I never knew LinkedIn was such a great resource.
It's much more of a business resource, and it's incredibly valuable for that. It allows you to do a lot of good work.
Well, you know, Norman, I have a friend who is in the computer world selling computers. He's a young man, and he came to see me. And I'm always telling him what to do. And he said to me, now, Carol, have you updated your LinkedIn? And what is on your LinkedIn resume? And I'm saying, I have no idea. I said, oh, my heavens. He said, that's the most important thing you have. You have to get on there. And he really let me have it. He's about 35 years old. Telling me how important that was, and he's not in the film industry, but he finds it works for him in his a non-related film industry business.
Those profiles are so incredibly important because recruiters, if you're looking for work, placement counselors, HR people, will all check your LinkedIn profile. Whether you're producing a film or you're hiring somebody to work in your factory, you want your job to be as easy as possible. Not easy. It'll never be easy, but as easy as possible. You don't want to spin your wheels. I don't want to go to 50 sites. I don't want to look at people's websites and have to go through 17 pages to find out where their bio is listed. I want to go to one source. LinkedIn allows me to do that. It allows me to go one place and find somebody. And invariably, I find people with blank resumes, blank information. Oh, people don't know what to list themselves as. I made a list for you, Carol, because we talked about this earlier. People don't seem to want to understand that this is a professional tool. And in the same way, your resume has got to be slick and good and list the important parts of your career, your LinkedIn has to. People have misspellings in their bios. I mean, horrible. They don't read information. Their big note was, you have to hear this, now is the tow boss to go. That was their... I have no idea what they were writing, but they never reread it. Somebody posted, and this is a film person, I am hardworking, fun, and friendly individual who loves meeting new people. I actually don't care. I was looking for a script supervisor. What do I care if she's fun and friendly and wants to meet new people? That's not... You have to look at this and understand that this is a professional site, and you want to list the things that are professional that enhance your career. And you have to know what your career is. When people join my group, one of the first things I do is look at how they identify themselves. In addition to things like filmmaker or gaffer or things like that, they list their careers as arts, certified facilitator, communications, education, electrical, just entertainment, fine art, machinery, management consultant, media, music, public, and translation and localization, which is one I don't understand at all. It's a foreign listing, and I do not understand it, and makes no sense to me. But anyway, rather than saying I'm a gaffer, I'm in motion pictures. They become a translation and localization specialist. It's not going to help. If I'm looking up somebody's resume, I'm not looking up translation and localization. I will look up gaffer.
Right. Oh, my gosh. There's so much to learn about this LinkedIn stuff. Thank you very much for helping me with this. But our show is almost over. I hate to say, time always evaporates when you're with us. But I want
you to
give us the name again of this group on LinkedIn so we can write it out.
The name is Film and Television Professionals. It is the only group, if you don't get it right, it's the only one that has about 140,000 members.
Okay, great. Now, how can people find you?
People can always email me. I'm norman@reelgrok.com, reelgrok.com. And they can always get to me that way.
All right. And your brilliant website is reelgrok.com.
Reelgrok.com. We are still rebuilding it. This is so painful. We had a crash that simply... No information was lost, Carol. It just all got dumped on the floor. And nothing is attached to anything else. So meaning that we've got thousands of files on there, but they each need to be reconnected to what they're about. So it means going through every single one, one by one by one. We've been working on it for about 4 months now.
Heavens.
We're about two months out.
Oh, 2 months out? Okay, great.
Yeah.
So by fall, like you said, it'll be up and really working again. I have to tell everybody, this is one of the best sites on the Internet. There's so much information on there. Templates for budgets, information about budgets. This just goes on and on. So you definitely want to keep that link.
Thank you, Carol. And it's there now. It's just not quite as good as it should be or will be, but it's still there now. So please have people come.
Okay, we will. Thank you so much for this information, and thank you, Claire, for hosting and taking care of our show.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's an honor and a pleasure. Norman, thank you so much. Great information to work with.
Thank you, Claire. I appreciate that, and I always a pleasure being here. I really do like it. Carol, thanks for having me on the show.
You're so welcome. I really appreciate all the things that you do for filmmakers on a daily basis. Your kindness is greatly appreciated. Take care,
Thank
Norman.
Thank you, Carol. Thanks,
Bye.
You too. Bye now.
Be well, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Production. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.